Okay, great. Thanks a lot for the invitation. It's a great pleasure to visit Perimeter Institute. This is my first time here. I'm really impressed by the physics environment and all the nice discussions. I hope I organize my talk in a very topical way. So I think I welcome any comments and questions during my talk. And I hope we can keep on the discussion even afterwards. Okay. So. So I will give this is the outline of my talk. I will just give a really quick overview about Lonely Particles at the LHC. Then I will highlight a few opportunities that I've been personally been involved in, classified by different topics, and show you some of the details of the different realizations of the opportunities. Okay, so let's start with the overview. For people who are not familiar with the topic, what is Lonely Particle? Okay, there are many particles whose proper lifetime is the horizontal axis is the proper lifetime of standard model particles. Vertical axis is the mass of those particles. Those include those fundamental particles and also those composite particles, hadrons and mesons. We can see that their lifetime spans over a whole range. Okay, if their lifetime is really short, that is smaller than a micrometer, we can classify them as prompt particles, roughly. Okay, some of them will get highly boosted. You can see some displacement. If their lifetime is extremely long, we'll view them as stable particles. So they're not. Those are two extremes. However, there are a lot of particles in the middle who are not prompt but not ultra stable. So they are Lonely Particles, which stand for metastable particles at collider scale. Okay. So here's the range roughly between micron and 10 meter. There's a lot of particles here. With the boost, some of particles like pions will go into this regime. At colliders, and the particle will decay on the flight, etc.
Okay.
good question. Okay, I blame this guy, but it's somewhere here. Okay. Neutrinos are really off the chart here. Yeah. Oh, sorry, to the right. Yes. Okay. Good. So. The particle having long lifetime are mainly coming from their approximate symmetries, and there are some of them are having kinematic suppressions. But for the traditional program at the LHC for BSM physics searches, we have been actively probing the prompt particles. We assume we produce a heavy resonance that decays instantaneously. By looking at the final state, we reconstruct the mass, say we discover the particle, like what we did for the Higgs boson. Right. There's a whole program behind searching for Z prime, W prime, etc. Okay. There are a few studies on detector stable new particles, such as dark matter candidates. We classify them as missing energy. Or there's an electric magnetism charged stable particles with respect to the detector scale. Okay. So. But why do we consider such metastable particles, which is lying in the middle? There are many motivations. Our long beloved supersymmetry gives us many candidates. You know, particles can be metastable, having a lifetime of meter level through this tiny R priority violating couplings, or they have coupling suppressed by via the high Susi breaking scale in gauge mediation, or there's a mini split spectrum that suppresses couplings through the decoupled heavy particles at the PEV scale, or there's pure Vino Higgsinos where they are nearly degenerate states that only having a mass splitting between the charge and the neutral state via electromagnetism contributions. Okay. There's a whole other class of Lonely Particles that under the name of Hidden Valley, like hidden sector coupled to standard model sector via very feeble couplings. Their production decays are suppressed by the smallness of the couplings. There's a whole variety of portal particles, like Higgs portal, dark photon, dark Z portal, neutrino portal, and this is heavy neutrino portal. There's the axion-like particle portal, etc. So the theoretical motivation is rich, and the experimental signatures are also are rich as well. Okay, here's a cartoon figure generated by our experimental colleagues from ATLAS, the transverse plane view of the ATLAS detector. The center point is the interaction point where I collide the two proton beams. They produce all sorts of metastable particles, which can fly a certain distance, then decay into jets. Fly further distance and decay jets. And some of them are decay earlier and give you charged tracks, etc. They can decay to all sorts of final state particles, hadronic or leptonic or photons, etc. And they can decay in different sectors, different sub-detectors. And they experimentally, they are classified as different signatures. And such a weird signature with rich program is also a new experimental challenge that has been realized more and more recently. Okay, the main reason for this experimental being an experimental challenge is because the detectors in the beginning are designed to search for prompt signals. Okay, for such metastable particles, the triggers are not designed to look for them. The reconstruction algorithm are not, by default designed for them. There are all sorts of non-standard background, like coming from cosmic rays or beam halos, etc., which you don't consider normally in your prompt BSM searches. One good news is that for the standard model, although the particle spectra is rich, as I showed you in the earlier slides, the dominant signatures are all either prompt or detector stable. So the standard model background are low for this kind of rich class of signatures. There are huge uncharted and well-motivated territories to explore. So it actually draw a lot of attention, and there's a veritable renaissance for long-lived particles. Okay, we can see all sorts of very nice proposals, and the whole world is planning on conducting new experiments searching for those hidden long-lived particles. Okay, you don't know all the details of them, but just give you a bird view on what their type. There are some special ones searching for monopoles, non-standard monopoles, or Millikan searching for mini-charged particles. There are those kind of beam dump experiments that searching for light long-lived particles. And there's Phaser, Masusa, Codex-B, Alex-3X, et cetera. There are more and more proposals coming up. They're searching for central hard long-lived particles. So all of them are looking for those rich class of signatures. And the research is really active. Okay, so after this really quick overview on these long-lived particles, I'm coming up with a few opportunities that I want to identify here in this talk. Those are very challenging signals, fall into this long-lived particle signatures, but I want to highlight the physics opportunity, both theory and experimentally, are really high behind them as well. Okay, so the first example I want to give is a high-quality axion. That is my recent work. Came like Sunday night with the Maryland group. We all know the strong CP puzzle, right? That is the theta angle of QCD, after taking into account the additional Yukawa contributions, has to be has measured and constrained to be smaller than 10 to the minus 10. Okay. Well, generically, the CKM CP angle is order one, and there's not good reasons to forbid the existence of the bare theta angle of GGD either for the standard model. So such a small value of this linear combination in the IR is a strong CP puzzle of QCD. Okay. Well, there are simple solutions, but most of them doesn't really work. Okay.
Why do you say that it's anticipated that argument is order one? As if I have a Hermitian matrix, it's explicitly zero.
Yes, but
and
just
the right-handed thing is not observable.
Right. So that's exactly the second part. So I'm simplifying the story a bit, right? So it could be very simple in the sense that the standard model itself respects parity, right? So I have left-right symmetric model; those terms are forbidden. I have Hermitian matrices, or if it's a CP invariant. But those things are ruled out by our by reality, The weak interaction value is parity. The from K oscillations, we observe the CPU violation as well. There's also a very nice solution of the massless top quark solution.
I don't understand. The K oscillations are decoupling in terms of the left, you know, the right-handed scale, right? But if the breaking of left, right occurs at a very, very high scales, if you manage to preserve the hermeticity of the matrices, ends is not an issue, no?
But the leftover ones do not decouple as fast as 10 to minus 10, right?
This is one thing is the scale independent, this like, and the other one is scale dependent, right? So I don't know how you can sort of all that lightly cross it out.
Okay. So let me understand. Let me clarify this. You are saying the measurement of EDM is a low scale measurement.
The theta angle feeds into the EDM without any sensitivity to high energy scale, right? So if I have a solution based on left-right symmetric model, if I'm skillful enough in model building, maybe I choose the scale of a few thousands of TeV, break it there, and how is it the problem with K-on oscillations?
But those are two different things to so-called solve the strong CP problem, right? You are talking about the interchange between them, or talking about they are feeding into the strong CP?
Why you cross it out based on K-on oscillation, because these are two different problems, right? And then you can say, oh, left-right symmetry at the TeV is crossed out by K-on oscillations. Okay,
fine. Yeah.
Yeah. The separate.
What's that?
I think it's just bad placement of where the pink text is relative to the points on the left hand side.
Like why is like I think like
a
Okay. So. Okay.
It's a different location.
Okay. Thanks for helping me clarify this. Yes, the current is the second item.
There is a wrong point, right? Yeah. And it's true that the strong CP puzzle is not a technical naturalness puzzle like some of the other ones are, right?
Yeah.
You could not solve it until you get high scales, and that could be the way to make it.
Right. Great. Okay. Good. So. That's right. It's a very intriguing puzzle, right? So everybody have thought about that a lot of times. Good. So what's left over, a very elegant solution is the axion solution, right? It's a dynamical relaxation of the theta angle by having the axion feeding the QCD axion potential and relax the theta angle to be zero. Okay. However, this axion fixes the dynamical angle that relaxes the theta angle, and we have to ask how good a relaxation it is. Okay, so essentially the axion relaxes the theta bar by via such a QCD axion potential. If there's additional potential terms contributing to the axion potential, they have no reason. Without symmetry protection to be aligned with this theta bar angle. So they have a generic size of the contamination scale. Okay. To make sure the theta solves the strong CP puzzle, the contamination scale has to be shallower than 0.1 MeV. Okay. So people often dub this as the axion quality problem. Maybe with my hand, are you suggesting?
Yeah, it's better because I'm afraid it will break the TV. It's not your fault. It's like.
That's
I'm not sure. They'll just put a new one in the same spot. In the center. So it's just going to cost us money.
Okay. Okay. For the PI, the financial problem, let me use my hand. Okay.
Can't use a laser pointer.
Yeah. So there are also, but one have to realize there are also many other scales in nature, right? There's gas scale, inflation scale, gravity, dark matter, etc. Usually, the axion quality problem are referred to the even a Planck surprise operator. For example, if there's a Planck, there's a general belief that the quantum gravity white is all sort of non-local symmetries.
Can I ask you, is it Planck mass or reduced Planck mass? When I see like the power of 10, right? The two things are different by 4 pi.
Yes. Yes. So
ridiculous difference, no?
Yes, yes. So here we use 10 to the 18 GeV. Okay. But we're using this as an estimator of how severe this quality problem is.
This is a parenthetical problem. It's a fair assumption, but that depends on the UV completion, that statement. Because if you embed the axion in extra dimensional theories, then it's dual to a local symmetry in the bulk.
Yeah.
And then you're protected by local symmetries, and then the global symmetry is a local symmetry. So that's
an elegant solution to a quality problem. I admit.
But it's a UV completion statement. Yeah. It's fair to think about.
Right. Let's say if we stay away from that clever type of extra dimensional solutions.
It's not clever. Yeah. It's strict theory.
Okay. Yeah.
Where does the implying to the tenth come from? Is that just some string theory statement?
No. So generically, you don't know which order these operators arise. Okay. But if you want to say I don't generate a contamination scale as larger than 0.1 MeV, this operator has to enter like at n equals greater or equals 14, which is you will be surprised that Planck surprise operator enters the game, but that shows you how shallow this QCD axion potential is. And some people call this axion quality problem like Planck slop contamination, etc. So it does have a strong CP dynamically, but it is ultra sensitive to any other potential contributions.
So in other words, I want to generate that lambda contamination term from an extra V.
Yeah.
It then has to come from phi to the 14th.
Yeah, even if it's a Planck surprise, it has to be a phi to the 14th or higher.
Okay.
But you can say I have theory constructions. This don't enter at that level, or have discrete symmetries, or have a promoted to some local symmetries, etc. Okay. You essentially expect gravity to break any non-local symmetries. Yeah. Okay. So.
The statement that you need 10 powers in FI must involve assumption about how big phi is.
Yes, it involves assumption about what's the decay axion decay constant. Here we just put it as a gas scale decay constant.
Oh, you put it. That's why it's not phi to the 9, it's phi to the 14.
Yeah. If you reduce the axion decay constant, that this number reduces. But for generic QCD axion, the decay constant has been constrained to be pretty large already. Okay, so
that's not true. The QCD axion has to be just heavier than 10 to the 9 GeV, not gas scale, right?
So if it's 10 to the 9 GeV, this I think this scale is 5 to the 10th power. Or phi to the ninth power, but still, it shows you the vulnerability of the axion potential. So what do we do? Okay, so here we just invoke a mirror sector QCD plus weak interactions with Z2 symmetry with respect to the standard model. Some people really love the mirror world, so this fall into that the class of models. So we have one axion coupled to both QCD and solve both strong CP puzzle dynamically. What does this Z2 symmetry do for us? It relates the theta angle of QCD and QCD prime to be identical. Okay, so this copy of the weak interaction and the Yukawa interactions ensures this Yukawa matrix contributions are being identical, B between two sectors. Here, we only break the Z2 in a very soft way, right? So there's only one dimension of parameters in the standard model, and which is the mu parameter of the Higgs. So if the hidden sectors, the Z2 sectors Higgs VEV is at the 10 to the 14 GeV, the QC confines at the earlier at the heavier scale. Instead of like a standard model confines at the sub GeV, the QCD prime can confine at TeV scale. Okay.
So this is you do a standard mirror world with a different Higgs VEV. So like Z2 standard model, different Higgs VEV for whatever reason, who cares?
Yeah.
And then that second Higgs VEV is literally the 14 GeV.
Yeah.
And that's how you get TeV QCD prime.
Yes. Yeah, so it's a really minimal violation of the Z2 symmetry. It's a soft violation in a controlled way, and we just, you know, the result is the QCD prime scale will change.
What is the 10 to the 14 GeV?
It's just one benchmark number. Later relate to our phenomenology of massive axions.
No, like, okay. I mean, a nice thing. Have you guys thought about how to make it like the twin Higgs type of thing where you have
to
mirror two
stars,
can you solve two birds with one stone?
Sure.
Of course, we
try
that.
Why didn't that work and you had to resort to having the mirror? Situation?
Right. So here's the theory justification now, which is we want to, the net result of this hidden sector is to reinforce the axion potential by just introduce a higher barrier, higher potential QCD potential for the axion, right? So if the hidden QCD confines at a much lower scale, the additional reinforcement is shallower, okay? So you reintroduce the axion quality problem, okay? So later on in the parameter space, you shall see that there are some minimal requirement for the hidden sector scales.
I understand that you want to have the Z2 because you want that one axion. You don't want new weirdness to pop up in the theta bar.
Yeah, I want the identical one. Otherwise, there will be two potentials dislocated.
Right.
I'm not solving strong CP.
I understand you essentially want to beef up the axion potential just to make it invulnerable to these small
dimensions. Right. Right.
10 to the 14 GeV is so big that Z2 breaking is pretty damn hard. Like there is a Z2 breaking scale to the 14 GeV. So I'm wondering, what about things like running effects on the Yukawas, et cetera? Can those induce radiative Z2 breaking in the Yukawa sector that ruin the theta bar?
Indeed. So one has to estimate what's the threshold corrections, which essentially enters in this the Yukawa part of the calculation. Mm. Okay. Otherwise, let's call them threshold effects.
Okay.
So they enter, which in my later slide I will show, they enter at four loops or higher, and which are, you know, very minimal corrections. So it ensures the quality of this this potential.
What is the expected misalignment? Like, I mean, let's say from those corrections, what is the expected theta bar difference between the two sectors?
It's four weak loop order suppressed times the Yukawa metric. I didn't have a number in my mind, but it's way smaller than 10 to minus 10, so we didn't care. Yeah, it's logarithmic and way smaller than this. Loop suppressed and way smaller than this, okay?
I mean, that could be signature, by the way. I'm not thinking about the second state.
Yeah.
Not that much smaller, right? Like four weak loops is like 10 to the minus 12 or so. So it's like, that sort of sounds like a signature.
Also, Yukawa matrix, Yukawa coupling products.
Are the terms like Higgs squared in one sector times the Higgs squared in another sector, do they appear?
So they do appear. So that's part of additional quality problem we introduce in this problem, in this setup. So we have to consider.
Why do you need to couple the two sectors?
I couple them through one axion, so that axion's potential can get enhanced by the other sector. So far, in this minimal setup, I only couple is zero axion itself. I didn't
introduce a mixing between the Higgs.
They don't introduce the mixing of the Higgs at low level, right?
So that means the only thing that couples the two sectors is the axion.
Yes. In this minimal setup, yes.
It's kind of strange. You say that the gravity introduces this axion tilting term, right? Phi to the 14 and
Pauli Higgs is just another scalar like that. Why wouldn't the gravity introduce Higgs squared times another Higgs squared over, I don't know,
yeah,
over M Planck to the zero power?
Okay, so let's promote that at least M Planck squared level, right? Due to this Z2 symmetry, you can do this spherical analysis. Anyway, so we will see there's have to be additional considerations coming into this.
I call it a solution to poorly formulated problem.
I think many of the questions are addressed in the later slides. So So. Okay, so what does this do for us? Okay.
Why not? you have to train.
Different environment, people behave differently. Okay.
You have to replace another with
no problem. Okay, so this setup obviously will make the quality problem better, right? So it's actually immediately make if I generate a lambda QC prime at like 100 TeV, okay? So this will make us robust against contaminations from scale of 10 to the 5 MeV, which is 100 GeV. Okay, so this immediately relax the n you needed for those Planck surprise operator to be to be better than 4 to 6. Okay, there's a different lines we can draw later in the parameter space. Okay, but as in our setup, the Higgs were the only thing different between those two copies. So this theta bar angles are identical between them. Flavor structure of the standard model ensures any change occurs. I think I have four loop. I wrote it 7 loops. That's running from the gluon stuff. And beyond. So this is not true for generic theory. So this Z2 play a crucial role to relate those theta angles and making it robust against all sorts of threshold corrections. But as postulated by our audience, it actually generates a new quality problem. Earlier, I put the axion potential as there's additional terms you can generate, H prime dagger over M Planck squared times this GG dual coupling. Those can modify the axion potential. The high scale of the H prime does generate a certain modifications. So this put the upper bound on how high the H prime I can have. So I cannot have a too large valve. Otherwise, I reintroduce an additional quality problem for my solution that is originated from this heavy Miro Higgs valve. So this is a resulting parameter space. We can see all those lines.
Dimension 6 operators, right?
Yeah.
What about dimension 4, just a standard Higgs portal?
Yeah, so we expect the modifications to the axiom potential to enter at the most at the dimension 6 level. In the sense that there's still it's breaking through the follow like this Z2 argument between the two sectors.
Is it forbidden?
Yeah.
I don't know what loops of gluons there. I get a quartically divergent thing that couples the H and H prime together, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah. About
but that just says that the UV is going to be the important part of that loop. So that means if you went back to where those things came from. Two different gluons.
Yeah.
No, but you have the axion that goes in between the two, but you cannot.
Right,
you cannot then. I mean, you can put the GG dual on the.
So.
Anyway,
so
what's
the Higgs portal coupling in your
theory? It's tiny. yeah. Well, the high axion decay constant is through the axion, right?
No, but what about graviton exchange? Like, H prime is so big.
So what's the operator you're thinking about, this graviton generated operator? So we do try to make the potential robust against the Planck surprise order up to starting into
the fourth H squared over M Planck squared. So you'd have Higgs Higgs bar, Higgs prime bar,
yeah,
times 10 to the minus 4. So you have a 10 to the minus 4 Higgs portal.
Okay.
Right? Because you have a Higgs to the 6 operator where 4 Higgs are Higgs primes, 2 Higgs are Higgses. You plug in 2 EVs and suppress by 2 Planck scales. So you have.
That's a really low. This is. Yeah.
You can just.
What's h squared, the h prime squared, basically. This is what Maxim is arguing. That's C2 symmetric.
That doesn't change
If you have an h dagger h prime dagger h prime, like, why does it change theta?
No,
you reintroduce like the hierarchy
ball.
Yeah,
it's back to the x
mass.
Yeah.
Everything the intersector is so heavy that the exportable won't do anything.
Yeah, right. Phenomenologically, it's irrelevant. We are not attempting to solve the hierarchy problem.
So you're saying that whatever the Higgs mass, I'll just in one sector, I do some arbitrary tuning to zero.
Yeah. So
the basic custom lattice relating the two sectors is the axion.
Yeah, is it? Yeah.
So what is that?
Like it's axion gluon, gluon, and axion other gluon, other gluon.
Yes, yes.
So then if I just do a graph where I take an axion and I, you know, take a gluon loop and then throw, you know, tops or whatever, I don't know how much area in the sector, but you know, eventually get Higgs's on the other side of the side. What's wrong with axioms arguing? Why do I get, there'll be some loop cutting factors, and there'll be some couple of dimensional coupling, but I'm not going to get any suppressions by big scales in that because it's dimension four.
So at least they are suppressed by the two, by FA squared, right? It's two dimension, five couplings.
But probably the dimensional grounds, there'll be something in the numerator.
Yeah.
And that'll be, you know, so what are the things in the problem? It'll probably be an ultraviolet scale in the numerator.
Yeah.
Probably a very divergent graph, and it'll look like a cutoff.
The Higgs anomalous coupling to the gluons is nicely like decoupling, right, in a 1 over VEV manner.
Unless you stick it in a graph where it's really UV sensitive. The derivative coupling, so love is high energy, right? So I haven't drawn the graph, so I made it wrong.
Yeah.
Now, the dimensional grounds are going to get some scale, and the only scale in your problem pretty much is zero.
Yeah, but the Higgs coupling to the gluons or gluon primes are anomalous couplings mediated by the fermions in the loop, whose coupling and mass scale cancel. So there's a nice heavy quark, heavy fermion decoupling theorem in those effective couplings between Higgs and gluons.
Yeah.
Right? So there's no heavy scale in the numerator. In those anomalous couple.
You said that you have 1 over FA squared.
Yeah.
But it's a dimensional coefficient, so something is in the
numerator, right? Right.
So unless it's a really small scale, I don't know, have you estimated this graph? I mean, you know how many.
Why do you say it's a dimension for operator? It's a dimension for operator.
Because Maxime's thing was he's wondering about getting the HH, H prime, H prime.
Yeah, but like that operator didn't do anything.
Yeah.
It's ultra small. So I do generate. But they're talking about different thing. You're saying this operator may have big enhancement, have UV sensitivity, right?
Right.
That's what you're really asking. I think this operator doesn't. I didn't carry out the full analysis now, but this operator is really higher dimension in the sense that the Higgs couplings to the gluons, the two Higgs couplings to the gluon pairs were loop induced, anomalous, and heavy fermion decoupled in a heavy fermion decoupled way. So the effective operator you write down between the Higgs and gluons are H dagger H and GG, right? Which is the opposite basis of GG dual in even. Sorry, H dagger H GG, yes.
I think maybe this is a conversation we can
move on
later, but I'm more worried about it. It's more telling if these operators don't matter, then it doesn't matter how big your coefficients are. So the spirit of Maxim's first question was that you know, you were worried about Planck slop as screwing things up. And so well before Planck slop, you worried about normalizable slop.
Right.
So you're saying that there was none of the normalizable interactions are affecting your
Yeah, they don't affect. But we can carry out more detailed analysis. You know, for any process you mentioned, we can do it afterwards.
We can discuss in detail later. But I think.
Okay. Yeah. But thanks for your question. Yeah. We did estimate the phenomenology doesn't matter, but for a particular diagram, we can write down the parametrics.
Question.
Yeah.
Why is there not an HH G prime G prime term and the corresponding C2 symmetric H prime G G?
So that will be higher surprise, from the sort of the generic setup.
So it's a Z2-symmetric M Planck suppressed term that you generate. That's going to be relevant.
No, in naive dimensional analysis, the naive mass dimension are same, but the from the detailed diagram between this, there's a preference between the Z2 sectors coupled to itself versus these two sectors coupling to the others.
We don't have any detailed diagrams for
operator doesn't matter either, right? That ratio is 10 minus 10. That's all you need. H prime dagger over M Planck squared is less than 10 minus 10.
That's
true. Okay. Natural requirement.
That's true. Okay. Good. So the quality problem is a very interesting problem, right? So let's take a look at what's going on. Okay. This setup is actually a generic setup. They give us a very strained parameter space. Okay. So the bottom left corner are this MA versus FA plane, the axion mass versus decay constant plane. To the left, the bottom corner, they are below the QCD axion line. So they are having a worse problem than the QCD axion. Here is the invalidity of the axion EFT, where the decay constant is smaller than lambda QCD prime, right? So because the axion mass, the dominant mass contribution are from lambda QCD prime, so there's simple one-to-one correspondence of this points in this plot corresponding to the scale of lambda QCD prime. Okay, so on the upper right corner, the Higgs wave needed to generate the required lambda QCD would be too large. And that would reintroduce the quality problem that I mentioned in the previous slides. And to the left corner, the more traditional, the Petrikin quality problem, of this Planck surprise operator will enter, at n bigger than 4 level. Then, okay. So the resulting program for this higher quality axion, okay, if you don't like this high quality naming, is in this wide region, okay. This wide region has been probed actively by all sorts of experiments, partially astral cosmo beam dump types of things covered just below GeV scale high quality axions, and there are collider searches looking for diphoton resonances or B decay to axion like particles decaying to photons that are covering this regime. Okay, so one thing I have to point out, the collider searches, the axion decay constant those collider searches correspond to in this simple setup where you expect those Wilson coefficients between those operators being of the same size, which means I don't generate a large hierarchy between the GGDO, BBBO, and WWDO couplings. The phenomenology are dominant by the axion decaying to gluons such that the leading search channel, which is axion decaying to photons, et cetera, will be suppressed. And the coverage of their scale is about 10 GeV, okay? So you may think, okay, if I have axion decay constant at 10 GeV, at least I'm expecting new physics to show up at 4 pi times this 4 pi times FA or 4 pi times FA or alpha S to show up at colliders, where there's a lot of new color particle searches at the colliders already ruled a lot of those regions. That's where this gray bar coming from, which means everything below are actively being probed by colliders, which we don't have any strong evidence for low scale color particles. Okay, so the net message is there's a preferred region that is white, then it has been covered by the red region, which are the active searches. The theory bias are not with the solid edges, but the experimental searches are with solid edges, so we know they are strictly ruled out in this plane. And we can see there's a huge region left in this center. Okay, which are a good region for axion EFT point of view, where the FA is above 100 GeV also. Okay, let me just emphasize, the GGDO is the defining coupling of an axion that's related to strong CP. Okay, so...
Sorry, I have a question. Mm-hmm. How can you say, that's 1 TeV.
Uh-huh.
But at some point, FA becomes less than the center of mass energy, the center of mass energy at colliders. So there must be a breakdown of the EFT at colliders too. So I don't understand how you can apply EFT to the axial decay constant when the center of mass energy in some of them is like TeV, and the axial decay constant is.
Very good question, right? So those active searches are actually really valid because our probes are at the central mass energy 100 GeV or more, right?
Yeah.
So the EFT is invalid. So for those searches to be valid, you have to generate large hierarchies between the couplings. You make the Wilson coefficient of this BBDO to be much larger than this GGDO coupling.
I have another question.
Yeah.
In your theory, is there massless dark photon, mirror photons?
That's why in the beginning, to avoid this massless degree of freedom, we say we only copied the SU3 across SU2. We didn't copy the mirror U1.
You have a mirror symmetry between differently charged objects, right? So there is no electric charge in the dark sector.
Or you can identify the U1 to be identical to ours, of the dark sector.
Then it's finished. Yeah. There would be the coupling to that to these guys would also be strong, right?
But suppressed by same axion decay constant.
You would thermalize it in the universe.
Yeah.
You can forget
about So another way to avoid that is to say we never reheat beyond the reheating temperatures below TeV. Because
if the axion coupling constant is 10 to the 4 GeV, let's say, it stays all connected all the way to the EVN and so on. So you have to rethink your sort of standard cosmology.
Can you allow for an extra
relativity? No. You have a very little room to allow that, yes.
A what particle?
No, just the dark photon. So
you have
a
mirror gamma, right? If axion couples to all this stuff, right? You couple 10 to the 4 like a GeV scale particle to a dark sector gammas, right? With 1 over sort of a TeV coupling, that would be excluded. You cannot copy hyperchar. Then what kind of mirror symmetry is this if it's not completely copied?
Well, you can share the U1 aperture.
Oh, you want to share the U1 aperture.
That sounds possible.
Yeah.
It does not sound possible.
Wait, what? I mean, it may the effects on the CP violation would be small because we always come through the filter loop, so that's always very high.
Yeah.
It may be fine.
Yeah.
I mean, look, this is not the prettiest model, but it may work.
Is it generic? We sort of avoid the detailed discussion of the cosmology either by stating we identify the U1 to be the same, we never reheat the universe to reach any of this active degree of freedom, which is about 10 TeV or so. Okay.
Your answer to the Mina's question was that the way they calculate the Clutter bounds, you're saying, is that they assume that these C's in those three operators are very small. Is that
we assume the C's of these three operators are identical. Okay, so that you can derive a limit, but the active search for them, in order for this to be a valid axion EFT, you actually need to have a hierarchy between the C's. You need to have the C1 to be much bigger than C3.
They also have to worry about all the other very mentioned operators you didn't write down that have one represent them. They're also not small, right? I would thought it's worse than that, in the sense it's not just the three operators you worry about. You worry about everything in the effective field theory once the derivatives are learned.
Yes. So all the derivative operators, so long as you assume the there's no big hierarchies between their Wilson coefficients, their phenomenology are dominated by the gluonic coupling, right? And additionally by the active searches between either axion decay leptons or decaying into photons, they are suppressed accordingly to those small gauge couplings.
That's true even if f is small.
Hmm?
You believe that you know that those statements are true even if f is small compared to the energies you're applying things
When there's a big hierarchy, the constraints you derive on F will be bigger. Okay. So maybe let me see if I have slides here. Okay, let's take the LC diphoton for example, diphoton search. I produce axion through gluon fusion and decay this axion as a diphoton resonance, right?
Well, my question is really is not being addressed by that because my understanding of what you're saying is that you're essentially taking an axion gluon coupling and you're kind of running it through graphs and you're telling me what the answer is.
Yeah.
But if you're really in a regime where the derivatives are not small compared to F, you have a whole bunch of terms in your Lagrangian that are not those ones. And so then, well, how do you know that the other terms are not?
So the other terms are so long as they generate at the same scale of the FA, their effects are smaller. They're suppressed by either the small mass of the fermions by the mass terms for the fermionic ones.
I'm surprised, I guess I would say.
Okay, so you expect those derivative terms are...
Well, if you're saying that the derivatives are comparable to F, then if you can write down GG dual A over F, I can write down GG dual GG dual A over F.
Those...
And then why is that small? And like, why can I put all kinds of things in there? Why is anything small?
Okay, you're talking about a different operator, like not this trilinear operators. You're talking about A GG dual squared operator. So that operator is higher dimensional in F cubed. But I think we're talking about the same thing. That is the axion EFT is not well defined here because the scale is too low, right? So that's really problematic. We admit that, but we don't want to, in some sense, you can just throw away this the direct search bound, saying there's no coverage because that's not the valid EFT.
Also, I mean, you also have constraints from the colored.
Yeah, so that's why we have a reference line saying, you know, no new color particle below 2 TeV. You just say, you know, to be a valid good EFT that consistent with direct searches, I don't want anything below this line, okay? But of course, the direct searches is not well formulated with such a low decay constant. That's a well-known problem, okay? That didn't stop people from looking for those light prompt resonances. To give them full credit, we translate that into this parameter space, even if it's invalid the EFTs. But under assumption, either all those Wilson coefficients are strong 4 pi or something that they are semi-valid. You can draw them here on this plane. Okay. So fantastic topic, okay? And here you see why those current searches are so low. Those are the solid lines are the current searches, which is this line, and the dashed line are the projections, which only improve by like factor of 10 or so, okay? So the reason why we have to, the message is the constraints and studies in the GEV scale realm is very minimal. The reason is obvious, okay? For an axion particle without a particular manipulation of the Wilson coefficient, their dominant production decay are both through gluons. Okay, hadronic axions are going to be buried in a QCD background at colliders, GeV scale particles. So that's why we have to rely on the photon, the diphoton decays, which is a rare decay mode of the axion when we do this prompt analysis to look for axion-like particles. Okay. So the opportunity is relies in the fact that if we say the axion decay constant is PEV, it's a really good EFT, right? And you can see it's dominant decay mode into hadrons, which is through this GG dual coupling, and into photons, which correspond to a lifetime of a centimeter to hundreds of meters level. Okay, so PEV scale decay constant axion. A good EFT correspond to long-lived particles. So this actually this preferred regime actually have a nice parameter space where these axions are long-lived, which may make them standing out of this QCD background.
So mm-hmm. Can I go back? So here the photons are very long-lived. The photon decay is long-lived.
Yeah, because the mother particle is long-lived. The axion is long-lived.
You have it there, centimeters.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, both. Okay.
Right. So this long-lived help us to select those axion GEV scale axions out of this big QCD background. Okay, so the phenomenology actually is quite tricky in the sense that I'm producing this particle through gluon fusion and recall that against the gluons and decay it via the same vortex. I need this decay constant to be big to make it long-lived to stand out of the background. But the same vortex controls the production rate of the axion. Okay, so long-lived regime correspond to low production rate regime. Okay, and there's no guarantee that the collider will give us one axion if it's a centimeter level lifetime. But luckily, thanks to the large gluon luminosities of a large hadron collider from protons, we do have thousands of axions can be produced even if the decay constant is PEV. Okay, so there's a tight game here that make it long-lived to standing out of background, then still having sufficient rate. Okay, so one crucial ingredient then is I need to capture all those axions. Otherwise, I need to trigger on them really, really good in a good way. So I don't want to lose any signal rate. So one would rely on the displaced track trigger. That is a proposed trigger system in a CMS experiment. With some minimal requirement I highlighted here. Level one, the tracks coming from the axion hadronic axion decays having some minimal displacement and impact parameters, and with a system of HT about 100 GeV, so I can record the whole event. Okay. After being triggered, there's a second problem is of how many background I have. Again, here we just want to estimate, this signal is really challenging. It's a GeV scale particle decaying to a few hadronic displaced tracks. Can it stand out of this huge QCD background and this fake track background? There are a lot of fake tracks around in my detectors. So we can estimate the total number of fake tracks event after post the triggering we consider. There's 10 to the 12 of them. But one can perform a 4D vortex fitting algorithm, which details are here. We just basically require all those displaced tracks are consistent with coming from the same mother particle that is axion-like, right? That can reduce the background to about 10 to the 3 level. Okay, there's a lot of details in the in those reconstructions, and the further matching of the information between tracks and the calorimetries will reduce the background to be even smaller.
So you're saying that you're looking for a single GeV scale on that particle?
Yeah, 10 GeV, let's say. Yeah.
10 GeV.
Yeah, we all show the parameter regime. Yeah.
So a single 10 GeV on that particle decaying hadronically.
Yeah, the recoil is against the jet.
Against a jet.
Jet plus axion.
Jet plus axion. Yeah. So you're going against the axion. Do you keep track of the jet?
Well, we keep track of the jet, but this jet is not that hard. We require HT of the system about 100 GeV, so this jet is 50 GeV.
Can you tell about the two jets that the axion decays to?
No, that they will be merged into one jet. So you have to look into a substructure of the tracks within a jet. That's all this vortexing algorithm. They are basically studying the track properties within the jet to make sure they correspond to a displaced vortex.
So what is the dominant background?
The dominant background. Well, there are two sources. Okay, one is QCD. One is the fake tracks. Fake tracks is much more special. The QCD, sort of well understood. They are prompt, or if they're long lived, they are those light particles like kaons, etc. Right? So, which they only produce two tracks, not three tracks. So here we require at least three tracks, and with environment mass and displacement to fend off this standard QCD background. Then the leftover backgrounds are those random pixel hits that you connect them to be tracks. Those tracks, because you connect them in the wrong way, so they have random impact parameter and random displacement. Occasionally, they can form a vortex that looks like a displaced, and you have to calculate how much is them. So these are the major background we are considering, and that's why we have detailed algorithm to. So material interaction has to be written in additionally via this geometric separation. any dense area have to be factored out. Any vertex origin from dense area has to be factored out.
If you're starting with 10 to the 12, you have to walk away many spatial resolution sigmas from each pixel, right? Like if you started with 10 to the large number and the rate of material interactions is not that small, if it does hit a thing, then if you end up with 10 to the sum large number and you want that, and you want to get that down to zero, you can't just be one spatial resolution away from each piece of material. You have to be like several spatial resolutions away from each material. So how much of it is left by the time?
But also with the inert mass of the system, okay? So the standard displaced vertex search just whittle away the density area itself. You don't need to be so many sigma away, okay? Okay.
Well, hang on. As far as I'm aware, there's no standard displaced vertex search for a single 10 GB long particle plus a QCD jet. This is a new kind of search.
Yeah, so this is a really challenging signal that we are proposing.
So
yeah.
Existing searches have other things that reduce background, like a lepton or a much harder jet, like a higher HT, in which case you don't have to worry about the initial material interaction rate being that high. If you have a 50 GeV or 100 GeV jet being your only additional requirement, then your, like you say, your background level a priori will be higher than in previous searches. And in that case, I think it's worth examining.
Yeah, of
if
course.
You have
yeah.
to step out significantly more in the material veto if there's still detector left by the time you're done vetoing.
Sure, that's true. But the background doesn't grow exponentially. It just grows just as your collision rate as you lower down your HT, right? Because those are just sort of the random interactions you have. Anyway, so we are not saying this estimation shows you're going to get zero background in this search. We are saying we at least demonstrate not only this signal can be triggered using this CMS, proposed CMS trigger, but at analysis level, at least it's plausible to reduce the background to a controllable level. Okay, this is a very challenging signal. I have been emphasizing all the time. Okay, so just to get a sense of what's the coverage in the MA versus FA plane with this HT above 100 trigger, which is the original standard CMS displaced track trigger, you can cover this regime like 5 to 10 GeV versus decay constant of PEV scale. Okay, because we actually require more than the original proposed displaced track trigger, we require 3 tracks instead of 2. We can imagine maybe they can relax the HT requirement a bit further. Then if you instead just require a minimal jet, you can cover a slightly larger, sort of larger regime. But it still poses the challenge. The challenge is this is a very tight game that you want to keep every single event that you have for these singly produced long-lived particles.
And remind me, Yuri's trigger idea really does operate at level 1, right? So
it's a level 1 trigger idea.
Modules or whatever. And they tell you, and then level 1. So this could be part of a level 1.
So this has to be a level 1 analysis. And the trigger we consider in the beginning is a level 1 trigger setup. Okay. So nicely, the coverage, if you translate into this logarithmic scale plane, the coverage isn't here. Okay. It's in the heart of the allowed region. I'm not claiming we cover the whole thing because below this line is prompt-ish. They are buried under QCD background, about which that I lose all my rate. So this singly produced non-linear particle, we are lucky we can cover this, but it's a very exciting opportunity. Okay.
What happens when it gets like you're cutting off those plots in the log thing at like 1 GeV?
Yeah, at 1 GeV. Because we didn't analyze things below 1 GeV, QC background is trickier, and also the axion decay is more complex. They do through chiral perturbation, you can do their mixing with all sorts of pseudoscalar mesons, and there's all sorts of threshold resonances. That's a totally different type of searches. But there are many beam dump analysis for this kind of regime that in the future they will extend to this regime. We can connect. Okay.
So Yuri's trigger idea at level 1, did it require 1 or 2 displaced vertices?
1 displaced vertex. Not even vertex, just one jet containing 2 displaced tracks.
Tell us a bit about that search. What's different compared to what James?
This is the general URI trigger proposal for using level 1 tracker information to do a level 1 vertex trigger, which is like a holy grail of all these kinds.
So this is a trigger part following this URI's proposal. We modified to make it slightly more robust, and we are conservative.
Would it require like some hardware upgrade? upgrades and like
tracking. Yeah.
It's an ambitious idea.
Yeah.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. But even if they realize that that still corresponds to 10 to the 12 event being triggered. And those are background even by default.
So that's the rate for a single displaced vertex.
Yeah, that's the rate for a single displaced vertex. You have to check at least through some algorithm you can surprise such kind of background. So we did more than anyone else. I actually tried to estimate what's the level of suppression you can produce with additional vertex fitting algorithm. Okay, so I. Okay.
Maybe you don't.
Okay.
There would be invisible decay channels for these axons. So maybe when the lifetime is longer in the region above the order bounds, you could have monojet plasmistic energy bounds.
The answer is no. The things above this one is not lifetime is not that long. You see, it's only 5 centimeters. It's not like hundreds of meters, thousand meters. It's really because above this line, I run out of axion production rate. It's a very special type of Lonely particles, a singly produced tight game from both ends. Okay? Observationally, you want it to be long lived. Rate wise, you don't want it to be so long lived.
You're already in the region which is excluded by us, plus cost. You will be up there on the left.
Yeah. I cannot rely on accelerator based searches anymore. Very good. So,
can't you trigger to the photon decay channel below 0.05 centimeters?
So this is we are focusing on the hadronic ones. You're asking maybe for the prompt-ish ones, let me look for photons.
Yeah,
okay.
Isn't that exactly kind of what those LHC bonds are that you showed?
Yeah.
Before?
Yeah.
Those
so
are super background limited. That's
yeah,
where
that's their coverage.
No, but at some point the photon decay will be long lived versus the gluon decay rate is faster.
But they share the same lifetime. It's the axion has it's just share the decay probabilities.
Right.
Yeah, right. So lifetime is the universal property. Then the decay branching fraction is separate. Yeah.
I'm just
confused. Yeah. 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 So I think I don't know. It's one of the three opportunities I mentioned in my talk. So I mean, go to the conclusion. Okay. Let's see. Okay. I overestimated how much I can go. Okay. Good. So, but
four slides back.
Sure. Okay. Let's go. Let me read the conclusion. Then we go back. Okay. So I basically give an opportunity view of the theory versus experimental landscape. There's a large class of motivated models for these metastable particles. Mainly into SUSY or hidden values. Okay, the opportunities and challenges are in this LHC main detector have great potentials for Lonely particles. I gave one example of high quality axion. It corresponds to a low mass hadronic Lonely particle, which have never been searched for at main detectors. There's other examples like heavy neutral leptons. There are low mass semi leptonic Lonely particles, which might be easier. Which actually we did some creative work in the sense that we dig into experimental papers finding that in some SUSY searches in their validation region correspond to this signal region. So we can, for the first time, you know, for Lonely particles, do a reasonable background estimation. Before, people can never do a background estimation for Lonely particles. And then there's nice possibilities of co-annihilation for dark matter, which results in Lonely the stops in these four-body decays. And that also corresponds to a compressed regime of Lonely particles. But there, if you can do that, that allows a co-discovery of the co-annihilator and the dark matter candidate, which give you a very nice a probe of dark sectors at the LHC. And also I have some more detailed proposal making new use of the fancy upcoming upgrades of the LHC, precision timing or the high granularity calorimetries, which allows substructure reconstruction in the calorimetry for the displaced vertices. And they provide new dimensions of information which can greatly boost the Lonely particle program. So I think overall, it's a very exciting program ahead and challenging. I hope we all, you know, think about it and come up with more creative work. Thanks.
What the model looks like when you subtract the U1 prime, because what exactly is happening, for instance, for the prime sector is electric symmetry breaking. Is that substantially different then?
In which sense? Okay, so I do have the SU2 copy there. So electric symmetry breaking break the.
Then your right handed step just isn't charged.
Right, they are not charged on anything. Yeah, and sorry, depend on detailed realization whether you identify the U1 in the mirror sector to be our U1 or there's a U1 prime. Okay, I cannot have not have a U1. Yeah, in this construction. Yeah.
So the Z2 is only required to relay the dark QCD and the normal QCD.
Yes. So the Z2. Is really just to ensure the two theta angles are the same for these two sectors of the ICM potential. Misalignment or any breaking of Z2 in a very violent way, that may depart those two is going to be a disaster for the construction.
Thank you.